Honoring veterans from sea to shining sea. You're listening to Hometown Heroes with Paul Leffler. Brought to you by this local station and its sponsors. And presented everywhere on the air and online by Paul Everett's RV Country. With 8 locations in 5 western states.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes and a fascinating conversation with a sharp and energetic 90-year-old. Sel Dante of Las Vegas has told us about his youth in Louisiana, his unique experience as a Jewish teenager serving in the 638th Tank Destroyer Battalion in Europe during World War II, and we're not done with that yet. Let's pick up right where we left off.
We got to the Elbe River 2 weeks before they surrendered. We had to stop there and wait for them to come. So we just bivouacked there and trying to enjoy ourselves because the rest of the army was stopped waiting for the Russians to come. And the Poles were evacuating their area as much as they could. They were swimming across the Elbe River and trying to get away from the damn Russians. They knew what the Russians were like.
Yeah.
The Russians lost more people than anybody else in the whole damn war. Russians lost something like 30 million people.
Yeah.
And that's a lot of people when you stop and consider that.
And the ones who were around were pretty angry about it and were ready to get payback.
Yep.
Was VE Day a big deal for you?
Oh, I didn't think so.
No?
We had already cleared the place out and there was nothing to do. We were sitting there waiting for it. They could have VE Day a week and a half early if they wanted to. But we had to wait for the damn Russians. After we left, I was stationed in a little place called Esperde, Germany. E-S-P-E-R-D-E. We loaded our crew and we headed out south. Went through Kassel, Germany. It was completely laid waste. There wasn't a brick, stacked on top of brick anywhere. It was all just rubble.
Mm-hmm.
They had bombed it to nothing. We went on to Heidelberg and took a left hand to a little town called Haspersheim on the Neckar River. That's where I did my occupation duty.
How long were you over there in occupation?
Not a whole long time. I came home to the States here before the war ended. I was on the high seas when they dropped the atomic bomb. Right before we went to Heidelberg, we took over a chateau that belonged to Admiral Dönitz, who was head of the German Navy, Chief Admiral of the German Navy.
Mm-hmm.
And we went in that place and we ransacked it pretty good. I got 2 swords off his mantelpiece and I got a ceremonial dagger with a pearl handle and a silver cord braided to it. That was my souvenirs right quickly. And that's all I could handle. I barely got those 2 swords in my big duffel bag. Got it back to the States safe and sound.
And really, those are significant pieces of history. Grand Admiral Karl Dönitz was actually the man who signed the Nazi surrender on May 8th, because by that time, he was the top-ranking German military official.
He had a wonderful mansion there, some estate. I gave the 2 swords to my first cousin living in Detroit, Michigan. He put them over his mantelpiece, but they were beautiful.
You mentioned that, you know, you lost your cousin before you went overseas. You've got other relatives who were killed in the Holocaust. But as far as the guys that you served with in your unit, did you have to deal with the loss of any of those guys that you got to know?
I wasn't close enough to any of them. Short time I was there. If a tank got destroyed, all I had to do was make a report on such and such were killed in action. I didn't do much typing. We didn't have time to do much typing, quite frankly. Always on the go.
What was the most challenging part of the whole experience for you?
It was all challenging. I can't pick out one particular time. I'm just so happy that I'm still here alive. That's the main thing. I went through hell like the rest of them, but I survived it. That's the main thing I want to do is survive it. But I was scared as devil most of the time. Anybody says they weren't scared, it's a damn liar.
Did you ever hear from home while you were over there?
Oh, yeah. Every time I got a box of cookies from home, they were all crushed up. Never could make it in one piece, but Mom sent me 3 or 4 boxes of cookies while I was overseas. I loved to share them with the boys. We always eat the crumbs on our fingers. That's all we had to do. That's all she could send was cookies.
And you made mention of this earlier, but I'd like to dive into it a little deeper. You've been over there a few months already. You've survived some of these close encounters where your life could have ended as a teenager. And then here comes Passover, and there's this Seder service. You're close to the front lines.
Yeah, we're on the front line almost all the time.
You know that the Jewish people are being slaughtered, but you have occasion to observe the most significant holiday of your faith. With Passover. Other Jewish Americans and British and a lot of nationalities, right?
I'm sure there were. Had over 1,000 people there for the Passover services, if I remember correctly.
Is Passover something that you had celebrated back home?
Always.
Every year?
Every year. I quit fasting 2 years ago. Hmm. I fasted every year for 88 years.
Why'd you stop?
I got to where I couldn't take it.
Physically?
Too many problems to contend with.
Mm-hmm. So your whole life, Passover is a significant thing.
Absolutely.
You fast, you read the story of Moses and the Israelites in Egypt.
Oh, yeah.
It's a big deal. But that Passover, 1945, with 1,000 other soldiers who were fighting this war against an enemy that wants to exterminate the Jews. What
was
that like?
That had great significance, because that was the first Passover that they had had in, I guess, 5 or 6 years before anybody had Passover.
The significance of the words you read and the ceremonies that you carry out, did it take on greater meaning there?
Well, my grandfather was a part-time rabbi. He took on the religious responsibilities of all of Southeast Arkansas. They didn't have a rabbi, so he was our acting rabbi. And when he left Arkansas in 27, they gave him a gold watch inscribed, "Thanks from the Jews of Southeast Arkansas for being their rabbi." I have that watch. I gave it to my oldest son. He's got it mounted under a dome so I can look at it and think about it every once in a while. But I've been from a religious family for all my life.
And I'm sure that you'd always been able to imagine what Moses and all of these Israelites in captivity in Egypt were thinking when the original Passover happened. But to be there in a war zone, knowing that your life is at stake, and all these 1,000 Jewish soldiers with you, their lives are at stake. What went through your mind as you participated in these same things you'd done your whole life in a very different setting?
I've gotten to that point where I wasn't scared. I just accepted things for what they were. I was so happy to be able to celebrate Passover. It's a very important holiday. I'm a strong believer in the Jewish faith. It's never going to be eliminated completely. It's not possible. Don't care what they say. They can all him and haw about it. But you cannot kill all the Jews on earth. Even though we're a small minority of the billions of people here we have, you're not going to be able to get rid of us. I don't think the Lord let it.
Well, that's what I'm wondering. If in that moment, as not even a 19-year-old yet, you're still 18 years old, celebrating Passover, knowing that those people thousands of years ago were spared, is there a real belief?
That never entered my mind at all then. I'm more interested in seeing about the war ending and us getting rid of those damn Nazis. I didn't even think about that at all. I know it'd be a lot to consider that way, but it never entered my mind to think about that. All I want to do is complete the job of getting rid of the Nazis.
What I wondered is if in that moment there was a belief that you weren't in that fight alone, that just as the Israelites had divine help, that you would in this situation.
It proved me already twice.
With the shell that was a dud and the bullet between your legs?
Yeah.
So for you, that's that angel of death passing over the doorpost with the blood on it.
You're right.
So I know we're bouncing around again, but you mentioned VE Day, and then you weren't there in occupation too long, and that the bomb was dropped in the Pacific while you were on your way home.
Right.
Were you concerned that you may have to go to the Pacific?
That's what we were going to.
You were?
We were supposed to go to the Pacific. We wore a crack outfit. They wanted us to get overseas pretty quickly. When we left Antwerp, we were in the middle of Atlantic when the first bomb hit, and before we docked in Camp Miles Standish in Boston, the second bomb had already hit. And we were sure that the war was going to end up. It did end up. While we were on high seas, it was over with. So we didn't have to go to Japan, so we were happy.
What did it feel like to be back in America?
I got down and kissed the ground when I got home.
Did you really?
A lot of us did.
Uh-huh.
A lot of us survived. We were just glad to be able to kiss good old American soil. USA is our home.
And I know you're still, you know, when you get home, you're 19. But how different was it to jump back into life again after being through what you'd been through?
I'm a fatalist. I take things in stride pretty easily. I was just happy to have things over with over there and back home again.
Mm-hmm.
See, my mother and father helped me out a heck of a lot.
And you went back to LSU?
Went back to LSU. I ended up as a petroleum engineer living in Lafayette, Louisiana. And living in Lafayette, you got to go offshore. Now, I cannot swim a lick. I'm scared of the water. Getting water this high, I lose my breath. Consequently, I had to do something different. So I left the petroleum engineering and I went into merchandising. I'd been brought up in my dad's store. When I was 9 years old, I sold a pair of shoes. So I've been selling ever since.
Mm-hmm.
I felt like I could go to Alaska and sell the Eskimos icebreakers if I had to. But my dad brought me up right.
You want to talk about the honor flight a little bit?
Okay.
You heard about the honor flight a while ago.
Oh, yeah. I tried my best to get on it while I was in Houston.
But you got
sick? 2.5, 3 years ago.
Uh-huh. Didn't work out. You weren't well enough to go when it actually came around.
Everything came along at the wrong time for me.
So then you move here to Vegas.
Move to Vegas.
Get on the list. And you get to go from Las Vegas to Washington, D.C. Your son is your guardian on the trip. What was that like for you? What did you get out of that?
It was a wonderful experience because I had to go see all the great, they're not monuments. There's only one monument. That's the Washington Monument.
Right.
That's a quiz show problem. How many monuments have in Washington, D.C.? They got one. The rest of them are honored places. A
lot of memorials.
Memorials. That's the word I was trying to get.
Yeah. So you saw the Vietnam Veterans Memorial, the Korean War Veterans Memorial.
The World War II Memorial.
And at that World War II Memorial.
The Ladies Memorial had just been opened up. That's a very nice one. Well done.
At Arlington, where you also saw the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier.
Oh, yes.
And your cousin was MIA in World War II, so that tomb, in a way, is dedicated to him. But at that World War II Memorial, all those gold stars, 406,000 Americans who died, you were almost one of them. Couple times. You're there with your son, who wouldn't have been born if you were one of
them. Right.
What kind of emotions did you guys encounter while you were there at that site?
Well, I'm pretty emotional. I teared up like everybody should tear up. Couldn't help myself. It's human nature to cry a little bit when you see all this stuff and feel it. You feel it in your heart for sure. We're very, very happy that we all have survived this far. But I had a blast of a time. They greeted us the same way they greeted us going and coming. Fire truck spraying water on top of the buses. Quite a thrill. And the police escort was unreal. The president couldn't have gotten away any faster than we did.
How about when you came back to Las Vegas?
That was the exciting part there. We had approximately 2,000 people at the airport to welcome us back. The fire trucks, of course, had given us a big water cannon salute. And if it came off the plane, who's going to be first? I'm always the number one off the plane. First one on the plane, they have a brigadier general there to greet us, shake our hand, and they have about 30 sailors. They greeted us and welcomed us home again. That was an experience. I tell you, they had people leading us all the way down the line with everybody holding up posters. My family was there to greet me. We went all around the dadgum terminal, everybody shouting to us and clapping for us. It was great. I'm getting choked up over that. See, I am pretty silly. At least 2,000 people lined up. Welcome back. Thank you, thank you, thank you.
And aside from just a few relatives, that's 2,000 people that you'd never met before.
Absolutely right.
In fact, you just moved here, but they were there because you did something that mattered. Did that whole experience give you a newfound appreciation of just how...
Absolutely.
Yeah?
I'm a sentimental guy. It makes me get choked up when I think about something like that, but it was quite an experience.
Now, you said it changed your perspective about what you had done. Did it change your perspective about America or young people or the future to see those people there?
It helped my feelings in somewhat, but today's younger generation hasn't had a chance to really develop any kind of likes and dislikes about something like this. So many of them don't know what went on, and they can't compare it to anything else. The older people that knew what was going on, like Vietnam veterans, Korean veterans and myself, we had a tendency to kind of want to forget about it because I never told anybody about my experiences until just recently.
Why didn't you want to talk about it?
I don't know. I was so disgusted with the world because of what had been done to the Jews. That was my first thing to think about is the Holocaust and what they had gone through there, particularly since I had lost family there.
Yeah.
And so many people don't even believe it today. And it hurts my feelings to think that people can be so ignorant has not accept the true facts of the situation.
Especially if they examine the evidence.
You're right.
Look at still photographs and moving pictures that were taken at Buchenwald and Auschwitz and all of these places.
I brought back some pictures of the concentration camp. I gave it to the Holocaust Museum in that little box I had.
Well, a couple of things. I want to say thank you. Thank
You're
you for serving
welcome.
Our country. Thank you for talking about it. And it strikes me that one of the best ways to address what you're talking about, the lack of awareness of younger generations today, is to do what you're doing, to tell your story, to say what you saw. If there's one thing that your kids and grandkids and great-grandkids could hold on to, could remember, could never forget about that time in our history that you lived through, that you had such a personal role in, what would that be? What do you want them to hold on to?
Keep the religion. That's most important. Keep the religion. Jews are never going to die out. They just can't get rid of us. But I'm hoping my kids realize that, my grandkids, and my great-grandkids realize that. They have something to look forward to. Blessings of the Lord.
What would you say you're most proud of and most thankful for?
I'm thankful to still be alive. I'm proud I was able to serve my country. Of course, I'm proud of my family. That's why I'm most proud of my family first.
And we know that your family is awfully proud of you and thankful for your legacy. That is Selwyn Dante, 90 years old, and he told me, yes, his LSU Tigers will beat Alabama on the gridiron this year. Stay tuned for that. You'll find a photo of him wearing his alma mater's colors at hometownheroesradio.com and the Hometown Heroes Facebook page. We're out of time for today. I do want to thank Belinda Morse of Honor Flight Southern Nevada for connecting us to Sel and the unique story he shared with us. I'm Paul Leffler, hoping you'll join us again next time and reminding you once more that freedom is not free.